Now let's look at how one orchestra tried to make the concert experience more welcoming. Earlier this month, the National Symphony played to a packed nightclub in Washington, D.C., and totally rocked the joint, at least according to our next guest. Greg Sando is a music consultant, a faculty member at Juilliard, and the author of a blog at artsjournal.com. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Naomi. Glad to be here.
So 2,000 people turned out for the National Symphony event. Was the orchestra able to walk that fine line of freshening up the experience without sort of pandering?
Yes, I thought they managed exactly that. They played, let's say, half the program was classical selections, the Candide Overture, something from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, and killer choice, the Stalin movement from the Shostakovich 10th Symphony, which really rocks as a piece of classical music. And the crowd cheered it all. But then they had three soloists representing music with a beat, a rapper who does human beatbox stuff, a DJ, and an extraordinary electric cellist. And they contrived pieces that the orchestra played along with, and they did their kind of music. And you know what the great moment was, Naomi?
Mm-hmm.
The electric cellist named Witold Liebing did a piece based on the prelude to the first Bach cello suite, the G major. And when it came to a very notable rising passage that's right out of Bach, the crowd started shouting, and their shouts rose with the music. So you could tell they were really, really into this.
What inspired this concert to begin with?
Well, the National Symphony has a program called the NSO in Your Neighborhood, so they like going outside the Kennedy Center. I'm not sure that they have totally strategized what the purpose of it is, but they had the idea of going to a nightclub. They picked a place that holds 3,000 people. The tickets were free, but they had to shut it off after 2,000 because they were afraid of getting mobbed, though in a way they were already. And I think, like everybody, they are looking to do something new to engage a new audience. I was interested that when my wife, Anne Majette, whom I know you've had on this program a number of times, when she wrote about it, she quoted Deborah Rutter, formerly of the Chicago Symphony, who now runs the Kennedy Center. And Deborah said in the plainest of language that things had to change in order to engage a new audience.
Were tickets for this concert less expensive than the usual hall?
You know, I believe they were free.
No wonder. You can always get a good audience for free.
Well, you can, but maybe 2,000 people. It was actually a triumph for Patty O'Kelly, the orchestra's PR person, who had never done the kinds of things you need to get this kind of new young audience. And she went way outside her normal comfort zone, and she aced it. So free or not, you had to get them out.
A lot of times with these concerts, there's sort of a thought that, okay, they may not actually convert these club-goers to patrons in the concert hall and build loyalty. Do you think that is an issue?
Yes, I do think it's an issue, and I think it's an issue that's best dealt with by just letting it be. This is probably an audience that will not come to the Kennedy Center, which has problems many concert halls don't have. It's really deliberately placed out of the way in Washington, so it's not easy to get to. There's no public transportation.
So these are people who are coming to a club for free. How do you, as they say, monetize this? How do you get these people to become supporters of the symphony, which does not exist for free?
This is something everybody is going to be working out as we keep moving into the future. I think probably what happens is that the orchestra does more and more events of this sort. They begin charging for them. They try to develop loyalty. They perhaps have memberships. They try to get people to donate money. And maybe, Naomi, although this is scary for a lot of people in our field, the Kennedy Center concerts become more like this.
Well, you mentioned that the concert featured very short pieces, the Candide Overture, one movement of Shostakovich 10, a movement from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. Do you think that the people in the club would have reacted differently if they'd gotten, say, the entire Shostakovich 10 or all of Romeo and Juliet?
Oh, for sure. That's not the kind of thing they're into as yet. once they become interested in the orchestra, I think it's a completely different story. I've seen new young audiences really happily listen to longer pieces, and I've heard of it happening. It's a matter of having them interested in the first place, then giving a killer performance, and maybe talking to them. And you say, this is a long piece. It has four movements. Here's what happens. I think people are really willing to go there with you, but you have to have them interested in the first place. You have to be talking their language already.
So what were the orchestra musicians wearing for this gig?
I don't recall. It might have been jackets and ties for the men and the equivalent and on the way to formality from the women.
Do you think orchestras need to pay attention to what they're wearing to make it less off-putting for people who might not be?
Oh, yeah. What presently we see is out of some 1910 movie about New Year's in Vienna, or maybe what the butler wears if there's a rich family in a 1930s movie. I think if an orchestra dressed like the Northern Sinfonia in Newcastle,
which is
Britain, they just wear black. They don't wear jackets. The men, they wear open-necked black shirts and black pants. Looks very spiffy. Or, even better, Naomi, the student orchestra at the University of Maryland in College Park outside D.C. They wear informal black, and for each concert, they pick an accessory. For each concert, they pick a color to accessorize with, tuned to the music. I love that. It's kind of my favorite new dress idea.
The recent NEA report found that people who considered themselves working class, self-described, didn't attend classical music events as much. Was the nightclub audience that you saw a more diverse crowd?
No, it was, to judge from the looks of it, kind of upscale white kids, a little bit hip. It was younger, but I imagine basically as well-educated as the symphony crowd. To get racial diversity, ethnic diversity, social class diversity, that's a whole different story.
Now, you're speaking to us from Juilliard, where you teach the class Classical Music in an Age of Pop. What do your students think of the idea, your students who are training, presumably, to play in orchestras and things like that, what do they think of taking the orchestra to a club?
Well, many of them are already doing stuff in clubs themselves, maybe in pop music, alongside their classical music things. So it seems pretty natural. But I'll tell you, I always begin the semester by asking them why they're taking the course, and every single one of them said, we have to make sure there's an audience in the future. We're losing the audience we have, so we have to figure out how we do that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome, Naomi. It was fun.
Greg Sando is a teacher, consultant, and writer. A link to his blog at artsjournal.com can be found on our website, wqxr.org. Ryan Wise is our producer. I'm Naomi Lewin. Thanks for listening.